My jaw dangled in awe and fear as it became clear she was some kind of spider woman. The black spider legs were almost as thick as her human legs and now touched the ground behind her. The chitinous clicking sound suddenly made sense, and I felt terror fill my stomach as her human body floated off the ground, suspended by the spider legs that attached to her back.
"I'm waiting for your answer,"
the spider woman said as she tapped one of her rear legs with impatience. She pointed at me with a shiny black chitinous finger. Her hands looked pretty much human, except they were darker than the rest of her arm and her long fingers ended in sharp points, like claws. My body was still numb with shock, and I didn't know if I should run from her spider legs, slap away those wicked fingers, or continue to stare at the beautiful human parts of her body.
"Trell, stop, please,"
the third woman said with a begging tone. I still couldn't see girl number three, but if another spider came out of the shadows, I was sure to die. Except that I couldn't look away from Trell. My mind said run, but the rest of me pretended not to hear. Her body defied the laws of physics and reason, as certainly as being teleported to a world of dinos. A sculptor couldn't have made a model with as perfect of proportions as Trell's human body.
"Are you done admiring my splendid sexual attributes, boy?"
Trell's question reeked of arrogance, and her spider legs relaxed to lower her back onto her human-looking feet.
"Would you like to study the curves of my ass next? I assure you, there is none finer."
I looked at her breasts once more, mostly so I didn't have to gaze at her spider legs, but also because they were absolutely amazing. God! How did they lift like that without a bra? They seemed even perkier than when I first saw her, and her pink nipples threatened to tear through the soft fabric of her see-through dress. No, I won't call you girls. Sorry. Scream in fear, or fall in love. My mind was going to split in half if I looked at her another second. I realized I was gawking at her nipples still, so I forced myself to look at her eyes.
"I am Trell Idyllyria, Duchess of Family Area. You should know your place, male. You are unfit to even share this fire with me, let alone stare at my perfect body. What do you have to say for yourself?"
Her voice was filled with disgust, and my mind spun as I tried to figure out the correct way to apologize to her. I had been staring at her, but I didn't know how to not stare at her. Thankfully, I was saved a response by the third woman. Her voice was cheery, bright, and I was finally able to turn my attention away from the spider woman.
"Don't be scared of her. We're all friendly, I promise. What's your name?" "Mine's Galmine."
The woman who spoke was a little shorter than Trell and appeared to be completely naked. Her skin was gray and textured with rough stone tiles that seemed to be set on top of the smooth skin. The rocky texture was much rougher across her breasts and in the hot zone between her legs, as if her body created extra layers of the rock-like substance to form coverings and obscure what was beneath. But the alien skin didn't make her body any less sexy. Her figure reminded me of a voluptuous swimsuit model I remembered seeing in the tabloids after dating a popular football player. Like every damned curve of hers was chiseled by a master artist and stuffed with twice the femininity. Fuck me. I hated always classifying girls by their physical features, but a lifetime of operating my man's brain on the default settings and my current level of fatigue left me with little option. She was just as beautiful as the other two women that stood around the fire, and I was once again blushing as I tried to keep my eyes away from her almost nude body. Galmine's shiny silver hair was pulled into a bunch on the back of her head in simple braiding. Her eyes sparkled like green emeralds. I looked into them deeper, and I couldn't actually be certain that they weren't made out of a pair of perfectly cut stones. Her face was a pale grayish color, but the skin appeared much softer than the rest of her body. The wetness of her upturned lips made it easy to see how soft and inviting they'd be. The smiling woman bounced on her feet, and her head tilted slightly to one side in anticipation. I vaguely remembered her asking me a question, but instead of getting her to repeat it, I blurted out the first thing on my mind that didn't involve smoking hot babes. "This is all so crazy! First the abduction, then those men get killed, then dinosaurs, then..."
"There were more of you?"
Sheila interrupted.
Yes, there were two others when I arrived here. Actually three, I guess, but one got killed right away. I turned my head away from her so I wouldn't be distracted by her tight body. The second guy died when some green, feathery dinosaurs ganged up on him and brought him down. The last man was eaten in the jungle. He helped me escape so I could make my way to where you found me. It was a dubious interpretation of Kelg's final act, but I didn't think it mattered.
Three more would have helped.
Galmine sighed.
Just three useless males,
Trell replied from behind the other two women.
As Sheila said, more will help us survive,
Galmine countered.
I'm thankful for your friendship, Trell. I love meeting new people, don't you? We should welcome our new friend into our home.
Pfft. Men serve my needs,
Trell said matter-of-factly.
The loss of three is tragic. But we saved one warrior. Galmine did ask for your name.
Sheila turned to me and raised a perfect eyebrow.
Oh, right.
My manners are off today. My name is Victor, I said with a nod. Trell sniped from nearby.
Victor? No family name? Ew. Not only is he a male, but he's of poor stature.
She shook her head at me and her dark hair swirled around the flawless vanilla skin of her bare shoulders. Oh, sorry. My family name is Shelby, Victor Shelby. I'm a human. My world is called Earth, and the city I come from is called Los Angeles.
I like the shiny metal on your chest,
Galmine said as she pointed across the fire to my shirt. This is my badge, from the Los Angeles County Department for Animal Care and Control, I replied.
That sounds official.
Sheila's eyes glowed from the fire, and she reached a clawed finger out to touch the metal of my badge.
It sounds stupid,
Trell huffed.
I bet he's a garbage collector.
No, I said as I tried to keep my eyes off Trell's nipples and her scary-looking spider legs. I help people with wild animals. It's a good job.
You controlled the animals?
Galmine asked.
Nope,
I laughed. I protect and care for the ones we rescue. Trell mumbled while her legs tapped on the cave floor.
Do you have any idea how to combat the flying orange ones?
Sheila asked. What do you mean? I replied, immediately curious.
I arrived 51 nights ago. I study everything here to help me survive. The last cave I was in was much like this one, but little feathered dinosaurs flew in and made nests. Alone they are weak, but they are very powerful when in groups.
I looked around. I didn't see any in there with us. Sheila seemed to know what I was thinking.
They aren't in this cave. Yet,
she replied with an ominous ending. They're on their way here? I asked. Sheila shrugged, and then added,
I believe they moved down the coast. It was a behavior I observed with them earlier. First, it started with scouts. One or two showed up and poked around the outside of my cave. Over the next 30 sunrises or so, more showed up, until there were dozens of them trying to get into my cave. I fought where I could to keep them out, but there were too many.
Let me guess. You already saw one here. I asked as if I already knew the answer. Sheila nodded.
A few days ago. They're hard to miss. They are bright orange like this fire, and their wings have plumage of black like the night. They have sharp teeth, but they can also pierce with their razor-sharp beaks. Very hard to fight more than one or two at a time.
Sheila's crazy.
Trell said with a chitter of her claws.
These birds aren't going to come to this cave. Why would they, if they have their own cave? If they do come, we have all we need right here to fight dumb little birds. She can defend us at the entryway.
I glanced at Sheila and saw frustration in her eyes. I didn't know how many days she'd spent with Trell, but the beautiful spider woman was already starting to annoy me. And it had only been 5 minutes. If that first one brings his friends, it'll be just like your last cave, I said. Sheila seemed to brighten a little.
With enough warriors, it can be different than my last home. We could defend the entrance and also take care of the hunting, fishing, and gathering.
How many more would we need? I asked as I shifted my focus to each of the women.
We would need us, plus five, maybe more.
Sheila said after a few seconds of thought.
I'm not doing it,
Trell's words were in a sing-song form.
Some of us want to do nothing,
Sheila suggested in an even voice.
Some of us are waiting to be rescued,
Trell added with insistence, and the ebony-haired Spider-Woman smiled. Her teeth looked like a vampire's, with twin fangs where her canine should have been. Who is coming for you, Trell? I asked with genuine interest. Trell pushed between the two women, and her spider legs carried her clicking across the floor toward me. The sight of her moving made the horror return to my nerves, but I calmed down when she stopped in front of me. She was elevated on her spider legs, with her silk dress dangling in midair, and my eyes were level with her nipples. It was almost like she knew that she possessed perfect breasts and was pushing them into my face so I'd be hopelessly distracted. Well, it was working, and I still didn't know if I should be attracted to or terrified of her. Trell cleared her throat.
My eyes are up here, male.
I forced my neck back so that I could look up at her face. Her eyes were the other alien part of her body. They had no white sclera part to them. They were just balls of black, the same color as her hair. Except the obsidian eyes now reflected the firelight, and the woman looked angry.
A man will address me as Trell Idil Iria, Duchess of Family Iria, not just Trell. I have hundreds of thousands of men wishing to breed with me on my planet. I am a treasure of significant importance. As for rescue, my sisters will cross the stars to find me.
I apologize, Trell Ilariola. I'm sorry, I began to say, but then I realized I'd Freudian slip Areola, and I began to apologize.
We might be rescued, but in the meantime we need to survive.
Sheila interrupted my apology to Trell.
If the orange creatures come as I expect, we need to be ready to defend our home. We also need food and water daily. As I said, this is easier with more helpers such as Victor.
Trell's glare was withering for a moment, but Sheila used her arm to guide the black-haired woman away from me. Trell's voice became less combative at the Catwoman's touch.
Is your skill that of a hunter, male? I might overlook your natural ignorance if you could provide food for me.
I'm not a hunter in the sense you think, but I do pursue animals so I can rescue them. I never stuttered in my life, but Trell broke some part of my speech center whenever I looked at her. Pursuing animals was a glorious description of snaring cats and dogs when they escaped from their cages back at the animal control office. We hired interns, who sometimes had bigger hearts than brains, and I'd have to round up the animals they let escape. But I often got to do actual field work and capture animals like Ernie the snake out in the wilds of suburban Los Angeles. I guess that was hunting. The three women looked at me, and they seemed puzzled by my answer. Did I say something wrong? I asked.
What's your skill, silly?
Galmine asked with a cute smile as she playfully tapped her temple next to her right eye. My skill? I asked with confusion. I knew Trell already thought me an idiot, but I didn't want Sheila and Galmine to believe it as well. Trell made like she was pulling her hair out, and her spider legs frantically tapped on the floor of the cave.
He doesn't even know his skill. How are you still alive?
I would teach him, just as I taught you when we first met, Trell,
Sheila said as she stepped toward me.
Whatever. I would have figured it out without your help,
the other woman huffed.
Examine my eyes,
Sheila said to me as she rested her hands on my shoulders. Her touch caused my heart to start sprinting, and I looked into her cat-like orbs. For a moment I felt as if I was swimming in a sea of gold, but then she winked at me twice with her right eye.
Wink, as I did, she instructed.
I blinked my eyes, but then I realized I needed to just wink the one. I chose the right, same as her. A burst of text appeared in my field of vision. Oh shit, what is this? I gasped. My already improved eyes allowed me to see better than I had back at home, even with my glasses on. Now they bestowed a new gift. A kind of dashboard appeared in front of me, like a heads-up display in a fighter plane. I reached out awkwardly, like a blind man at the strip club. I knew the image was in my eye, but it shimmered when I moved my hand just so. I couldn't help but giggle at how awesome it was.
That is correct, Victor. You can move within the IQ display by using gestures. In time, you will also be able to control it with slight adjustments of the eye itself,
Sheila said while stepping out of my way. Come again? IQ? I said while still flopping my hand around. I had to watch carefully so I didn't accidentally grope her as I grabbed at the shimmering letters.
Is that not what you see at the top?
Sheila asked. Sure enough, in the top right corner were the words I-E-Y-E-Q, written in fancy script, like it was a software company logo or something. My name was also on the very top line.
Touch your name, and it calls up some computer jarvel, Galmine added helpfully.
I mimicked touching my name on the screen with an air tap of my index finger. It was kind of like using my tablet back home, but it still felt silly tapping blank air. Sure enough, the screen blinked and a new array of jarble appeared next to a picture of me standing with a dumb look on my face. I didn't recognize the background, but I was wearing my uniform and Aussie hat, so I figured it was very recent. A few rows of data reported all sorts of things I already knew, eye color, height, and weight, although I thought it was reporting a bit high on that one. Lots of stuff similar to a driver's license, but also my home planet, along with some strange long rows of numbers. At the bottom section were stats like in a video game. Strength, 3. Stamina, 2. Movement, 3. Special skill, tame. Level 2. Is that what they wanted from me? It says strength 3, stamina 2, and movement 3. My special skill is called Tame, level 2. Does it mean anything to you? Trell laughed uproariously.
Tame! You can say that again. I told you men are helpless.
I think tame sounds like a wonderful skill,
Galmine purred. Trell didn't miss a beat, but spoke with noticeably less hostility.
Well, come on. If he had said, Starship Builder, it might have blown my skirt up. Neither of you can seriously think Tame is going to do anything for us.
What are your special skills? I said as politely as possible to redirect Trell from insulting me. I feared they were going to throw epic abilities in my face and make mine look ridiculous by comparison. I was kind of facing Galmine, so she spoke first.
Mine says grow. And I guess that's because my people are very adept at growing plants. In my world, we have far less sun than here.
Galmine pointed outside of the cave, and then brushed her silver hair back with the same finger.
It's also much cooler. We live off vegetables and grains. My IQ says I'm level 1. My strength, stamina, and movement all say 1, but I don't really know what that means.
It means you are too nice,
Trell replied with a sigh.
What do you mean?
Galmine asked Trell, and the gray-skinned woman smiled sweetly at the Spider-Woman.
I like being nice to people. You're all my friends. I wish I were home, of course, but I'm happy to be in your company.
Never mind,
Trell grumbled, and it seemed to me that the haughty woman couldn't bring herself to be mean to Galmine. What about you? I asked Sheila.
It says critical strike. I grew up training with weapons, so I suppose that is what they mean. I'm also level 1.
They? I asked.
Idiots! The beings that took us from our home, tore our eyes out, put new ones in, and dumped us here to get eaten by giant lizards.
Trell spat the words and crossed her arms over her chest. Yeah, sorry for kind of a stupid question, I said and forced myself to smile at the dark-haired woman. Her long, thin fingers were more spider than human, and I wondered absently how she touched people without hurting them. And what are your stats, if you don't mind? I asked the feline warrior woman.
My strength and movement are both 8, but my stamina's only rated at 4, she replied.
Wow! That's amazing, I whistled with awe. Sheila was much stronger than me. Trell snorted. And then she cleared her throat and pointed a long finger at me.
You aren't even polite enough to inquire what my IQ reads. You should have asked me first, since I am the most important one here.
Trell looked like she rolled her eyes at me as she spoke, but it was hard to tell because they were all black. "What is your special skill?" I asked while being excessively courteous. Trell was quickly approaching the point where her beauty wasn't enough to justify her attitude, but I still didn't want to piss her off.
"Structure building,"
she said without further explanation. I could tell she was waiting for me to say something. She smirked, and I saw her vampire fangs again. "What does that do?" I finally asked. She threw up her human-looking arms.
"How should I know? Do you think I want to build something? You, peasant work."
Trell's pretty nose scrunched up with disgust. "And, what are your stats?" I asked, really trying hard to be nice.
"My strength is higher than yours, male. That's all you need to know." She huffed. "If you were on my planet, I'd put you at the back of my 10,000 deep suitor line. I'm almost tired of hearing my own voice repeat it, but you are going to be useless to us."
"That remains to be seen,"
Sheila replied to Trell with more patience than I thought possible. "Whoever brought us here and did this to us is very powerful. They must have had a purpose for bringing him here as well."
"Yeah! So he can drain away our food and water,"
Trell sniped back under her breath. "I can carry my own weight," I countered. I couldn't believe that I was weaker than Trell, but her spider legs and claw hands did look deadly. Strangely, I was also a little deflated at getting tossed to the back of her suitor line. It was like high school all over again, with the prettiest girls not giving me the time of day.
"We appreciate your help, no matter what skill you have,"
Sheila said with a nod, and I saw Galmine smile at me pleasantly. "Just tell me what you need me to do, and I'll do it," I said with more confidence. Maybe Trell didn't like me, but Sheila and Galmine obviously did, and I'd work to protect them. "If angry birds are coming to roost in your cave, let's figure out how to stop them. With four of us, I'm sure we can think of something."
"As I predicted, the male is only as good as the women who command him."
Trell walked around on her human-looking legs to the other side of Sheila. Her spider legs were now folded up on her back again, so they resumed looking like bulky wings. It made her no less scary, because I knew they could come right back down. "No," I said. "It's not like you command me. I'm willing to help. If we all work together, we can..."
"I do not do common labor or planning,"
Trell snapped.
"Haven't you been listening?"
Galmine moved to be close to me.
"Don't worry, Victor. Everyone has their place. I'm not very strong, nor do I move fast, but I'll help where I can. If we find a spot for a garden, I can grow some vegetables for us to eat."
"Can you grow meat?"
Trell huffed. Galmine was steadfast. "I'll do whatever I can for you until then."
"I'm glad you came to us, Tamer."
She stepped closer and surprised me with a quick hug. Her body was surprisingly warm. And during those tantalizing seconds we were joined, I wondered if the gray rock on her skin counted as clothes, or if she was actually hugging me while she was naked.
"We have a few hours of sunlight left, and much to do, but I'll show you around,"
Sheila said. She directed me to follow her through the large cave opening, but the task became shamelessly sexual when I watched her firm ass sway in her torn bikini bottoms. Her long blonde mane swished across her butt hypnotically while she walked, and I almost tripped over a rock when I was watching her instead of where I was stepping. A dozen wooden spears were leaning against the wall right at the exit. Their tips were burnt for strength, and I saw one of them was covered with blood. I figured it was the one she'd used to kill the giant crocodile that had almost eaten me for breakfast. "What's that for?" I said while pointing to a clay pot just off to the side of the mouth of the cave.
"Do you not relieve yourself?"
she deadpanned. "Oh," I said, realizing the whole world was now my toilet. "All the time." I laughed to cover the dumb question. Then I followed her out the door. I rubbed my face with my free hand as we emerged into the daylight. Every moment of my life was now a surprise, but I was greeted by a huge shock in the landscape. Instead of the wet, sticky tangle of ferns, vines, and strange, sinuous trees from yesterday and this morning, we were now in a forest of huge conifers that seemed more like the Sequoia Redwoods than a Jurassic jungle. There were relatively few of the true giant trees, and they grew with 40 or 50 yards of space between each other, for as far as I could see into the grove. Ferns and other small plants hugged against the trunks, and clumps of smaller evergreens dotted the forest as well. There were also flat open areas of fallen pine needles between each of the ancient redwoods.
"How far away was the place where you rescued me?"
I asked as we walked down the narrow pathway leading from the cave to the bottom some 25 feet below us.
"About a mile and a half," Sheila responded. "How is that possible?" I wondered.
"Where are the vines and stuff? It's like we're on a different planet, and we didn't go very far."
"I do not try to understand the technology controlling this world. I've walked the coast for many days, and have seen several different lands. On my world we have vast swamps, grasslands, and forests, seemingly without end. Here everything is jumbled, as if the builders want to confuse us."
She paused for a moment to choose her words carefully.
"I stayed here because it reminds me of home."
I wanted to ask her about her world, but something she said was more pressing.
"How do you know what mile means?" I asked. "Do your people use the same unit of measurement?"
"Yes,"
Sheila said as she shook her head.
"You misunderstand. Our abductors have made it so we speak the same language and use the same measurements. It sounds as if you're speaking my language. We believe they've done this so that we can survive in the world they built."
"You think all this was built?" I asked as I thought through her words.
"I do not know. It matters not. Come."
She walked me to the bottom of the ramp in front of the cave, and then we turned around to look back along the route we came. I could barely see the cave mouth back up the steep hillside.
"I spend all day hunting or berry picking. Trell won't leave the cave to do the work, and Galmine moves too slow to escape any of the creatures that are on this planet. You cannot really see the cave from the position down here, but I worry about dinosaurs getting in. A second warrior with a spear would make things safer."
We stood facing each other as the sunlight beamed from the pine boughs high above.
"Yeah, it seems as if you've been supporting them," I said.
"I do what I can. Having someone who will cooperate will help us all,"
Sheila answered, and her yellow eyes seemed to focus on my badge.
"I'm happy to help. You did save my life."
I smiled at her, and I lost a bit of my breath when she returned my smile. She was like the sun to Trell's darkness.
"I've been here much longer than the other two. Trell is convinced help is coming. I think Galmine believes that too."
"But not you?" I asked as I stared into her beautiful golden eyes.
"Rescue might come, or it might not. I do not want to bet my life on the uncontrollable actions of others. I predict that those birds will return to the cave and force us to fight. They might not, but if they do, we will not be able to survive against them the way we are now."
She shrugged, and the movement did all sorts of amazing things to her chest area. "It's too bad that the guys I first met are dead. They could have helped defend us against these birds."
"It does not matter," she said. "They are dead. Wasting energy thinking about what could have been will only hamper our ability to survive. I know Trell will not agree, but you showed up at the perfect time."
"Yeah, she doesn't like me for some reason. But I appreciate your words," I replied with a smile.
"We're all scared, Victor. This world is cruel and unforgiving. I do not know what happened to Trell before I found her, but the constant threat of death affects us all. Do not let her words bother you."
Sheila's voice was intoxicating. I had a million questions about her homeworld, her travels on this one, and how she came to be with the other two women, but I had her alone, and there was one burning question I needed to ask.
Why do you sound like you're speaking Australian? It's, distracting as hell."
I was tempted to tell her how sexy she was when she spoke it, but it didn't seem appropriate.
"This is my natural way of speaking. I am surprised that you interpret it as an accent from your world, but, as I said, our captors did something to our minds to let us understand everyone's different languages."
"Okay, so you..." I began, but motion caught my eye near one of the large trees 50 yards away at the edge of the clearing. I watched for a few moments before I was certain what it was.
"I'll be damned! It followed me!"
I laughed a bit at the thought, and guided Sheila's beautiful eyes to the object of my mirth.
The little blue roadrunner dinosaur was hopping around pecking at the ground. It would look up, move a little closer to me, then peck at the ground again and pull up some big bug and swallow it whole.
I saw that beast around you before,
Sheila said with a touch of amazement. Yeah, I've tried to get rid of it, but it doesn't get the hint. Maybe I should keep it for a pet? I laughed at the thought of having a roadrunner for a pet back home. It would look hilarious on a leash at the dog park.
Can you call it to you?
She asked.
Seriously?
She nodded and then looked at the small bird.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
I took a few steps in the direction of the dino bird and hesitated. If I was back home, I'd try to snare it and bring it out of the wild. But this was all different. The aliens who built this place, if I believed Sheila's theory, must have had a reason for wanting this bird to follow me. Damned if I could think what it was. On a whim, I blinked to turn on the IQ and pointed my hand at the bird inside the overlay of the user interface. "Tell me what that is," I said half-heartedly. I was so surprised at the response, I blinked the thing off. "Holy fuck! It worked!" I said. "What are you doing, Victor?" Sheila called from over my shoulder. I held up my free hand with my index finger pointing up, hoping she understood the please wait gesture. I blinked the IQ back on and looked at the screen. It showed an outline around the dinosaur and displayed its name. Identification, dinosaur, Gingivanopteryx, elegans, male.
This is awesome! Hey, that dinosaur is called Gingivanopteryx. Ugh, this name sucks. I'll call him Jinx for short.
I'd encountered long names in biology and animal sciences, but seeing them and saying them were light years of difference.
Here, Jinx, come!
I crouched down with glee, still with the IQ system displaying in my field of vision. At first, the little animal didn't do anything, and I imagined Sheila's disappointment behind me. Then the bird sort of hopped a few times in my direction, and I thought I had it for sure, but then it got back to pecking at the ground. I called it for several minutes, but finally had to admit that wasn't going to work. I flicked off the IQ and turned to Sheila. I expected an insult like Trell would deliver, but the warrior catwoman smiled brightly instead.
"I do think it likes you," she said. "He will come closer next time."
"Yeah, I guess," I replied as I looked at the little blue dino again. It had already hopped away, and I suspected that Sheila was just being nice when she told me he would come closer next time.
"See? He can't even tame a puny beast. Useless male,"
Trell shouted from behind some bushes up by the cave entrance. She laughed and then disappeared back through the opening.
"Trell is harmless," Sheila said as she stepped near me and motioned to the cave. "And that is the challenge we have."
Her problem was not complicated. Trell wasn't going to help, and Galmine couldn't survive out and about in a world full of bloodthirsty predators. Sheila rescued me, believing I was going to be extra hands needed to fight for survival. The dinosaurs that took out Heracula and Kelg sent a shiver down my leg. But sexy girls in distress were more than making up for the terrifying experience. Maybe I'd stumbled on why the aliens chose me. I really liked animals and beautiful women. Our eyes met once more, and her feline orbs pulled at me as surely as if she was reaching into my brain. We stared at each other for a few moments, and then she tilted her head and looked up and behind me. When I didn't immediately turn to follow her lead, she looked at me again and repeated the act. I finally got the hint and turned to face what Sheila was looking at. A pterodactyl-type dinosaur swooped through the pine boughs and landed near the top of a medium-sized tree in the grove of redwoods. The branch sagged under the weight as the dino bird folded its wings next to its body about 75 feet over our heads. The beast was much scarier than the drawings or models I had seen. The size reminded me a lot of the California condor, only a little bigger. The wings of the creature were each longer than I was tall. The dinosaur had hooked claws on the end of the top joint, and its long maw was pointed and very sharp. Its skin was gray with brown undertones, and it blended almost perfectly with the tree branches where it perched. I felt movement by my foot and looked down to see Jinx standing behind my boot. The little guy was looking up at the pterodactyl while he trembled. You said the bad birds were orange, right? Does that thing want in too? I asked Sheila as I turned up again.
I am not surprised something else wants the cave. It is a good location for mating and laying eggs.
Sheila was correct. We were standing out in the open below him, but the pterodactyl didn't seem curious about us. Instead, the winged dinosaur was staring intently at the women's cave. But now it was my fucking cave, too.
I'll help you defend your home, I said as I turned to Sheila.
I'm thinking you're right. We are going to have to fight birds sooner or later.
It'll be hard work, Victor.
The woman's full lips turned into a small, hope-filled smile that made my heart dance in my chest.
No worries. You saved me, so I owe you.
But I also want to live, and I want to protect your friends in the cave. Even Trell.
Thank you,
she said as we shared a quick smile.
Evening is fast approaching. Let us get back inside and tell them about this new flying dinosaur. We have much to do to make things safer for all of us.
I'm looking forward to it, I said. And then I followed the beautiful woman up the narrow path to where her friends waited for us. Chapter 5 Sheila and I returned to the cave to report the presence of the pterodactyl to the other two women. The cat-like warrior went right inside, but the smell of food stopped me in my tracks at the entry. The small clay pot was still on the outskirt coals of the fire, and all threats to the cave seemed distant once I took another deep drag of the incredible turkey dinner smell. The last meal I'd eaten was a pair of strawberry Pop-Tarts. I hadn't even bothered to toast before I drove to work the morning I was abducted. I overheard Sheila mention the pterodactyl, then compare it to the orange birds, and finally, she pointed to the food on the fire. That's when I realized I needed to be a part of their conversation, so I took a few steps into the cave. My hunger pangs spun up like a train's diesel engine, and the three beautiful women cocked their heads toward me at the interruption.
Sorry about that. I'm kinda hungry,
I said with a good-natured chuckle and a little boyish pride at the impressive protest by my stomach. The smell was overpowering, and I was in danger of floating into the air, drifting over to the cooking pot and diving in headfirst like a cartoon character.
Laugh it up, male. The delicacy is not for you. You'll have to get your own.
Trell spat. Okay. How do... I began.
Victor, please do not worry, Sheila replied. I caught this turtle for the benefit of all who live here. You're welcome to some. Sit and enjoy it, please.
Trell turned to study me, and I felt her eyes scour my body. After a few moments, she finally reoriented on the sexy feline woman.
Sheila, before you sit down, I wanted to remind you it is getting late, and we are out of water,
Trell said while tapping one of her sandals against something hollow on the floor near the fire. I turned to Sheila and saw exhaustion flicker across her beautiful features. But then she looked at me and her eyes were determined.
I have not forgotten,
Sheila replied as she bent over and picked up a medium-sized clay pot that might have come from my mom's kitchen. She held it upside down as if to prove it was empty and then carried it toward the door. I gently grabbed her arm before she could get too far.
You have to go back outside? Now? Where are you going?
I stammered.
To get water from the stream. There's a drip of water in the back of the cave, but not enough for all of us. 3 times a day I go out to fill this. I've been away from the cave for too long and our supply is gone, Sheila explained.
You mean you just rescued me, brought me to your safe home, and now you have to go right back out into the wild? Don't you have time to recharge with some food?
I asked as I tried to ignore the rumbling in my own stomach.
Trell is correct, Sheila replied. We must gather water from the creek before it gets too late in the day. That is when the forest becomes dangerous, so I must go as soon as possible.
How far is it? I asked.
It's only a 30 miles through the trees, but delays are common if I see wandering predators. There will be more threats if I do not leave immediately.
And you expect me to sit here and eat while you fetch a pail of water? That doesn't sound fair at all, I said, while pointing to the fire in the simmering pot of goodness.
You are tired. You need rest,
Sheila said as if they were dull facts.
I'm not Well, yeah, I'm tired, I said. But we're all beat down. You're living in a cave in the forest. You take care of your friends. There's no way I'm gonna sit here while you take a risk for me. I'm coming with you.
Ugh. Take the mare, then,
Trell said with her voice full of frustration that kind of surprised me. It almost sounded like she had wanted me to stay while Sheila left. The blonde catwoman looked at me with her beautiful eyes. Then she nodded to me with gratitude, and we walked over to the spears near the front door.
One of us needs to carry this while the other guards,
Sheila instructed as she held the small pot. It had no handle or lid, so there was no easy way to carry it and grip a spear in the same hand. It would even be more cumbersome when full.
As the male, you may wish to carry the spears and protect me,
Sheila said quietly, as if explaining the rules of a game. I glanced at Galmine and Trell, waiting for a snappy comeback from the spider woman, but she must not have heard Sheila's use of the word male. Her statement tapped into my man brain in a way I hadn't felt since snagging Ernie the snake at Lacey's pool party. I could protect this beautiful woman in this carnivorous dinosaur world. I could be her hero, even if the task were something as basic as collecting water. My gamer's brain argued it was better to align the skills of each player, so everyone was utilizing their best assets. I'd witnessed Sheila's prowess at slaying that mega crocodile, and knew her assigned skill was critical strike. Even if I was the kind of asshat who said women were second-class citizens, which I sure as hell wasn't, I'd be a fool to try to compare myself to her when it came to fighting with spears.
On the other hand, Sheila continued, it would be useful for you to see my methods and learn my route before taking on the task of protecting the water carrier.
Yep. I don't really care who leads or fights, as long as we have the best person doing it. Right now, that person is you, I said while reaching to get the pot from her.
Thank you for trusting me,
Sheila said as she handed me the pot.
It is very dangerous out there.
She selected the wooden spear with crocodile blood on it, as well as a second one for her other hand. Then she strode out of the cave but waited at the top of the ramp as I grabbed one of the remaining spears. The one I took was as tall as my chin and arrow straight. They were all impressive weapons, considering she didn't appear to have any tools around.
The stream is that way,
Sheila said while pointing straight out into the redwood forest, almost directly below the pterodactyl watching our cave.
We'll run for a distance, and then we'll stop at a hidden safe spot to watch and listen for predators. If there are none, we'll run for another period until we find a place to stop.
You mean predators like that bird thing up in the tree? I replied with a little nervous laughter.
Yes, and worse. It would be best if we could hide or climb a tree, but if we must, we will fight.
She angled one of her spears in my direction as emphasis. I'll do my best, I offered.
Do not worry. On my planet, women are expected to fight to the death to protect the males. I will ensure you make it back.
No way, Sheila. I respect your customs, but it's the women who should be protected at all costs. That's how it is where I come from. It's called chivalry.
To die in combat is an honor, Victor. Women on my world may not hold land or choose who to marry, but we may always choose to fight and die for those who are worthy.
I didn't think dying in combat was an honor, but it wasn't the time or place to argue. She didn't invite me to discuss it either. She was already scanning the surrounding forest with her hunter's eyes, and my heart started to race when I thought about the danger ahead of us. Let's just hope it doesn't come to that, I said after a slight hesitation.
Are you ready?
She asked as if the game was about to begin. I nodded grimly and looked beyond her at the jungle. But who was ever ready to run into a world full of dinosaurs? Those green-feathered monsters could have been hiding behind any of the redwoods in front of me. I shook my head to get rid of my thoughts and looked up at her. She nodded and began trotting down the ramp. Her long hair flowed and bounced to each side of her tightly packaged glutes. 99 times out of 100 I'd have found that super hot, but this was the one deadly exception. I needed to focus on not getting eaten by dinosaurs right now.
When we reached the forest floor, she picked up her pace and ran directly for one of the largest trees, about 100 yards away. I had trouble keeping up with her at first, but her sprint slowed to a fast jog as we entered the grove of ancient redwoods. I'd taken an elementary school field trip to a similar forest back in California, but I didn't remember much about it other than the trees were hundreds of feet tall, and it took most of our class to link hands all the way around one of the bases. The giants in front of us looked just about the same size. Sheila ran directly into a large clump of bushy green ferns, mixed with long cattail stalks. When we reached the trunk of the first tree, she squatted down in the leafy undergrowth and motioned for me to do the same. I set the water pot next to me and tried to calm my hammering heart and heaving lungs. Even though we hadn't run very far, my breathing was a freight train of noise compared to Sheila's.
"Shh. Just listen,"
she whispered. The sun was low in the sky, and it cast its orange rays almost sideways into the great forest. Some of the rays met Sheila's soft face and caught her golden eyes just right. I admired her watchful gaze as those shimmering feline eyes scanned the deadly but beautiful forest around us. If we weren't in mortal danger, and if I wasn't in dinosaur land, I would have whipped out my camera and snapped a picture of her. Except my smartphone was sitting on the passenger seat of my truck back on Earth. Even if I did have my phone, it wasn't like I'd get reception here, and there'd be no way to charge it. As my heart rate and breathing slowed, I began to hear the sounds of the forest around us and smell the scents of abundant life. Birds squawk from high above. Crickets and cicadas provided a constant background hum. The smell reminded me of family camping trips in the woods, with the familiar ferns and redwood trees. I could have been back in Southern California rather than a world of ancient dinosaurs, and I was amazed at how close to normal it all seemed. Pine needles were everywhere on the ground, and I absently rubbed my hands through them while waiting. Of course, my curiosity was rewarded with a dab of sticky sap on my fingers that I promptly rubbed on my pants. Giant dragonflies and horseflies bounced from leaf to leaf or flew around each other in aerial dogfights. I felt an itchy pinprick on my neck and then groaned as I slapped the tiny mosquito away. It was one piece of home I wished the aliens would have skipped, because I'd already been bitten a dozen times since I came here.
"Those little ones are the worst. They're everywhere,"
Sheila whispered. Roars in the distance reminded me of even bigger threats. It might have been a Tyrannosaurus Rex telling the jungle it was in charge, or one of God knows how many other carnivorous hunters and killers. Less powerful roars, chirps, and growls carried on the wind from far away like the background soundtrack from a packed Jurassic Zoo.
"It sounds chaotic out there."
"What are you listening for?"
I asked as quietly as I could. It took her a few moments to turn and respond.
"The best hunters will remain quiet as they stalk you, but they cannot stay silent. I'm listening for the sound of brush or ground clutter being disturbed. Sometimes it's the lack of sound which gives warning. If the forest itself falls silent, beware."
I gave her a thumbs up sign, hoping the gesture made sense to her. A minute later, she seemed satisfied that we weren't being stalked and motioned for me to follow her again. Sheila kept our path close to the base of the trees. I didn't know her exact reason, but the undergrowth seemed to accumulate there, so I guessed she used the ferns as our cover. We ran in and out of several more clumps of the green brush, always heading in a line. After several more minutes, Sheila turned us a bit, and we went toward a massive redwood, which probably fell over decades ago. The base of the trunk had come out of the soil, and the severed roots poked out from the dead giant like a fiery torch lying on its side. The ruined upper branches were almost a football field away. She jumped over some rotting bark and ran into the downed tree through a gaping hole in its side near those roots. Our footfalls echoed into the empty space, and bugs of all size and shape scurried into hidden layers as we arrived. I felt like a dinosaur-sized woodpecker had drilled through solid wood from one side of the tree's trunk to the other. The sunset leaked through numerous smaller cracks and holes, giving a hazy glow to the earthy interior.
"There's the stream,"
Sheila said as she gestured to the hole leading out of the hollowed tree. I got up next to her to see a fertile waterway that reminded me of something from Bambi. A small flowing creek ran over large boulders as it meandered through the redwood grove, and it seemed to attract flowering plants, cattails, and ferns like a magnet in the junk drawer. A little pool of clear water sat almost directly in front of us, and it presented a happy pastoral scene, fit for a small talking deer and his woodland friends. A few little blackbirds pecked in the mud of the far shore, but there were no big dinosaurs anywhere in sight. Still, Sheila studied the scene for a full 5 minutes while I waited and watched too. I had just set the pot down when she spoke.
"I believe it is safe. I see and hear nothing of concern."
I gulped, aware of what was next.
"You can leave your spear here. I'll stand by the water while you fill the container," she said.
"Sounds good," I said dryly.
"And do not forget to drink from the stream while you're there," she said. "Though not too much. We might have to run."
Sheila gestured for me to wait a moment, and then she ducked through the front hole of the tree. I watched her athletic body leap up and over a few prominent rocks, and then she stopped at the peak of a small boulder right at the water's edge. She crouched there, and then looked around cautiously before waving me over to her. I hopped on the rocks like she did until I knelt at the edge of the 20-foot-wide pond. Then I flipped off my hat while inspecting the surface for anything that was going to try to eat me. I didn't see anything remotely like a giant crocodile, so I dipped my hand into the cool stream and then drank my fill right from the source. The clear water was way more satisfying than my almost fatal drink from the dirty lake, and a million times better than the teas I got out of the cup back in the cave. I tried to limit myself, but I was so thirsty I drank until I felt it slosh inside me. I submerged the clay pot into the clear water, and dozens of tiny colorful fish scattered. The orange light of the late evening sun reflected off their scales, so they glittered like coins. The rocky bottom was also lit up by the soft light, and I imagined walking the refreshing knee-deep water to the other side. Maybe Sheila could step in and we'd both fall over and get sopping wet. She already wore a bikini.
"We must go,"
Sheila interrupted my fantasy after she took a moment to drink from the pond at my side.
"Back home, we have many streams like this one, so I would enjoy staying on the shore longer. However, it is too dangerous. We must return."
"Yeah," I said with a nod. I lifted the now-filled pot and followed her back across the boulders. When we reached the shore, I one-handed my hat off the ground, expertly slapped it over my head, and balanced the unwieldy pot while we made our way back to the fallen redwood. "You've been doing this by yourself?" I asked after we were safely concealed inside the hollowed-out tree.
"I did what needed to be done, but fetching water is easier with your help. I'm glad you're here."
Sheila gave me another half-smile, and I finally felt my heart hammer for a reason other than fear. She may have been a tough warrior catwoman, but I was proud I'd made her happy. Her words soothed my anxiety, but I was still a bit nervous about the next part of our trip.
"How do you not spill this?"
I asked as I looked down at the clay pot. I figured there was maybe half a gallon of water in there. I'd filled it right to the brim, but I'd already spilled an inch in the first 30 feet of travel.
"There is no effective way to seal it. I tried bark and leaves. Galmine even made a nice clay lid for it, but it broke. Once the water begins to slosh, it escapes anything I use to cover it."
I looked at it as a problem to solve. On some TV show, I heard of ancient hunters using the bladders of animals to carry water. Or maybe I saw it in one of the billions of internet videos I'd watched. The details of my life kind of ran together over the last several years. What I did know was that there had to be a better way to get water to camp than what Sheila and I were trying to do.
"Are you ready?"
she asked, calling me back to the moment.
"Let's do this,"
I responded. Sheila hopped out of the downed trunk with all three spears in her hands and set off toward the cave at a trot. I tried to follow through the clumps of ferns as quickly as I could, but carrying an open pot of sloshing water really slowed me down. I kept my eyes on the ground just in front of me and focused hard on steadying my arms to keep the pot from swaying. She stopped to check for predators, but I didn't even have a chance to catch my breath before she indicated we had to move on.
"This way,"
she whispered over her shoulder as she took off. Everything looked the same in the forest. The largest trees were like pillars of brown stone in a giant room sealed by a pine needle roof. Smaller trees filled in some of the gaps, but much of the forest floor was wide open. It was easier to cross those flat spaces, but it also exposed us to potential predators. Somehow Sheila knew where to go, and I stayed focused on my own job of not tossing out our drinking water. At the next big tree, Sheila let me rest for a moment.
"I'm taking us a little to the side of the cave," she explained. "If something follows us out here, I do not want to lead them right to our home."
I wanted to tell her how impressed I was with her hunter instincts, but I couldn't catch my breath, so I used my time to take off my hat and wipe sweat from my forehead. Fast walking home with a pot was as draining to me as jogging to the creek without it, and my lack of fitness wasn't doing me any favors. I put my hat back on and smiled.
"We're almost there, Victor. Next time I'll carry the water," she said with a grin.
"Deal,"
I huffed. We left that piece of safety, and I soon saw the familiar shape of the hill and ridgeline above our cave. There were fewer big trees on the slope, but more of the smaller ones. Back home, tree cover meant nothing to me. Here, it could save my life, so I was starting to notice the small details of terrain. Sheila led us along the bottom edge of the slope, and I walked as fast as I could to keep up with her. A sigh of relief left my throat when I caught sight of the familiar rocks outside the cave. We were almost back, and would be safe in the cave in less than a minute. I froze in my tracks when I glanced up and saw that Sheila had stopped a few yards ahead of me. She stayed in her stance for a little while, until she motioned for me to come up to her. I tried to walk as silently as I could, but leaves crackled under my feet like a marching band drumline. When I reached her, she pointed to the rocky outcropping about 100 feet ahead.
"The bird dinosaur we saw in the trees has landed at the base of the ramp. It's moving toward the cave. We must hurry and protect our friends."
"Got it. I'm your shadow." My voice cracked a bit, and my heart somehow increased its already fast tempo. I didn't really want to fight another dinosaur, especially with a pot full of water in my hands. She gave me a sideways glance, and then took off toward the cave in full-on Amazon warrior mode. I followed at a slower pace so I could alternate between looking ahead for trouble and down to my hands to steady the sloshing water. I finally saw the dinosaur when I got closer. It blended into the underbrush of the hillside but was definitely now on the ramp and heading toward the entrance of the cave. Almost like it knew the territory had been vacated by those most able to defend it. When Sheila saw the intruder, she waved a spear and screamed to get its attention. The pterodactyl kind of lumbered around like I'd seen bats do. It hunched over the elbows of its wings. The dino belted out a surprised squawk as it hopped up and started flying to get away from her. Dust blew from the side of the path, and the creature slowly climbed into the sky before the blonde woman could get too close. Sheila dropped two of her spears, twisted her right arm back, and hurled her javelin at the flapping lizard. It was an impressive display of athleticism, but the dinosaur was already 30 feet in the air, and Sheila's spear fell short and sailed just under its feet. The beast seemed to understand that Sheila had almost hit it, and it let out a screech as it circled above her. "It looks like it might try to dive!" I shouted as I weaved my way through the trees of the hillside. As I reached the spear Sheila left behind, the pterodactyl fell through the leafy canopy like it had been dropped from a plane. It smashed through several branches and snapped them like dried twigs. At the last possible second, the pterodactyl threw open its broad wings and came to a hover just a few feet over Sheila's head. The down thrust of wind blew Sheila's long hair around, and it looked like part of the mane covered her face.
"Sheila! Above you!"
The blonde woman dove away an instant before the razor beak would have impaled her. The catwoman rolled a few yards, got back to her feet, and hopped behind the trunk of a small tree. The pterodactyl made another dive toward her, but its wings were so large it could not fly under the low branches. It was the perfect defensive spot, and she was able to avoid its attacks. The animal screamed in apparent frustration, beat its wings a few more times, and then circled back to land on the hillside close to Sheila. As soon as it landed, its leathery wings folded on each side so they became the odd-looking legs again. The dino didn't appear quite as scary on the ground as it did in the air, but now could easily walk into the clump of trees where Sheila had retreated. Without a weapon, it wouldn't be easy to keep that sharp beak from poking her. She needed my help.
"Hey! Over here!"
I shouted at the pterodactyl as I set the pot on some flat ground and then picked up one of Sheila's discarded spears.
Get away from her! I yelled as I sprinted toward it. I didn't know how to fight a winged dinosaur from the Jurassic era, but I did know how to deal with rabid animals back home when they threatened humans. I closed the distance with my speed.